Every year we experience the Seder in a different way. The world is different and we are different. And certainly this year, Pesach Tavshin Pei Dalet, Habo Aleinu Letova, we're different and the world is different. And so it feels as though in certain ways, not only are these ideas that we're going to share tonight ones that I don't recall ever having shared before, but hopefully they'll also resonate, each one in its own way, hopefully, to enhance our Seder experience, either something that we can share, or an idea, an approach, a stance that we can have as we experience the Seder. Because everyone's Seder is going to be different. We begin the Seder with Kaddish. Kaddish means the recitation of Kiddush, the first step of the Seder. And there is a beautiful, almost magical tale, Hasidic tale, which is told of the Shpoler Zayda. The Shpoler Zayda was one of the Hasidic masters at the beginning of the Baal Shem Tov's movement. And it's cited in an essay by the late Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb. And he tells over this maisa from the Shpoler Zayda that happened on Seder night, that the holy tzaddik, the Shpoler Zayda, called his young son to begin the Seder before Kaddish, as many of us do, by reciting all the steps of the Haggadah. And this is very common in many places. And in those days, there was a special poem or description of all of the steps that was recited. And Rabbi Lamb remembers this as a child. He grew up in a European, even though he grew up in America, he grew up in a European context. So the previous generation that he knew, they had the children recite this Yiddish description of Kaddish Orchatz. He says he remembers this from his yeshiva elementary days, that the kids would learn, they would come home and they would explain each step in Yiddish. And he writes in the transliterated Yiddish, Kaddish, aus der Tate kimahein fin shiel, mach der Kiddish bald kidei, der Kinder sollen nicht schlufen, und sie sollen fragen dem Anishtana. Kaddish, as der Tata, when the father comes home from shul on Pesach night, he has to recite Kiddush quickly so the kids shouldn't fall asleep and they should be able to ask the Manishtana. This is what they used to say in Europe. This is what Dr. Lamb says he remembers as a child. That's how they would open Kaddish with this poem, and they would go on. And when the Shpoler Zayda asked his little son, who was learning in Cheder, to recite the introduction, instead, he just said, Kaddish, when the father comes home from shul, he makes Kiddush. And that was it. And the Shpoler Zayda was upset. He was upset with the Malamed. Why didn't the Malamed teach his child the whole paragraph? So the next morning after davening, he approached the Malamed in shul, and he said, you know, my son, you can imagine the Shpoler Zayda, like, my tuition dollars, you know, my son, he came home and he didn't know how to say the whole paragraph. So the Malamed said, that's not so important. That's just a poem, but that's not important for the Seder. And the Shpoler Zayda, he said, you have no idea what the meaning of this phrase is. And it's such a beautiful way to enter into the Seder, thinking about this affect, this vibe, this feeling. The Shpoler Zayda said, read it carefully, not literally. He said, if you take a new meaning, a deeper meaning, it means when the father comes home from shul, it means the father with a capital F, when the Rabbono Shalom, when our father comes home from shul. And what does he see? He sees all of his children, all of the Jews, so overcome with enthusiasm and love for mitzvos, the dedication that they have. They're sitting around their Seder table. He proceeds lekadesh, not to recite Kiddush, but to betroth, said the Shpoler Zeta. Kadosh Miloshon Kiddushin, like the idea of a marriage. The Rabbona Shel Olam proposes to us, Ve'irastech li be'emuna betzedek v'mishpat, and then the metaphor switches. And now the Jewish people are not the bride, the wife, but the children. We are the Yelad Shashu, and we are the beloved children of the Rabbona Shel Olam, our father. And what does he say? He says, we have to make Kiddush right away so that we shouldn't fall asleep. Sleep is a parable for exile. Ani yishen avali bi'er. That when we endure a very long exile, when we fall asleep, we wouldn't have that same relationship. We wouldn't ask the manishtana. We wouldn't reach out. We wouldn't have a connection. So the Shpoler stated, he said, you missed out on this whole meaning. That the idea is that at the beginning of the Seder, we should feel that the Rabbona Shel Olam loves us and he wants to give us a hug. And that even though there's going to be a time where we're going to fall asleep, when there's going to be Yeshena, that we might feel distant from God, from various challenges that we face, whether it's personally or collectively, but we have to know that the Rabbona Shel Olam wants us. And so he's going to be Mekadesh us, he's going to hold on to us, he's going to give us that opportunity to feel connected, even though there is the potential for sleeping, because it's such a long and difficult galus. So how do we start the Seder? Kaddish, with Kiddushin, with that recommitment, the betrothal between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thought it was such a beautiful insight. After Kaddish, we're going to proceed with the steps. Yachatz, we break the middle matzah. So the Heilige Chassam Sofer lived in Pressburg at the first part of the 19th century. Chassam Sofer says, I don't understand. Why do we break the matzah? We know it's supposed to be lechem oni, bread of the poor, and the poor, ma darko shel ani beprusa. It's true they're going to break it. But why don't we break it after we recite Hamotzi? Normally, it's preferable to recite Hamotzi on a Dover Sholem, which is exactly why many of us have the custom to have three matzahs, so that you have two, which are your Lechem Mishnah, the top and the bottom, that are whole. So he says, why do we break the matzah? So he says something extraordinary that can explain to us the whole arc of the night of the Seder. He says, when we say, Chayav Adam Liros Esatzma, we have to see ourselves as if we're going through this process of redemption. It means that at the beginning of the Seder, we're not free. We're not emancipated, and we're not even Jewish. We're not subject to the halacha. We don't have a mitzvah to have Lechem Mishnah on a full loaf of bread. Because we're still in Egypt. When we were still in Egypt, we weren't a nation yet. We had no covenant with the Rabbona Shel Olam. We hadn't converted. It's only through the Korban Pesach and the Exodus that we become Jewish. So he says, it's that spirit in which we see the breaking of the matzah. The breaking of the matzah symbolizes we're not even reciting a bracha right now. We're just breaking it and eating it. And he says, what's another expression of this same idea? That we are literally converting on the night of the Seder. You'll notice that the special mitzvah that we have on the night of Seder, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, retelling the story of the Exodus, that mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim doesn't open with a bracha. Why don't we have a bracha? Asher k'nishanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu l'saper Yetzias Mitzrayim or nisim v'flos. We could have opened with a blessing, which is what you do every other time you have a mitzvah. When do we have a bracha on the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? At the way end, Asher Ga'olonu, at the end of Magid, we say, oh, there's a beautiful bracha on the... Why isn't it at the beginning? So says the Chassam Sofer, you're nodding, because what happens when a person wants to become Jewish? They immerse in a mikvah, but they don't recite the bracha on the tevila until they emerge. Why not? Because they're not yet Jewish. When someone comes to convert, they recite the bracha on the tevilah after. There's a whole discussion how that parallels regular tevilah, whether people recite the bracha before or after. It's related to this issue. A ger, how can a ger say asher kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu before they dunk? They're not yet Jewish. So says the Chasam Sofer, when we're starting Magid, we have the broken piece of bread, it's like we're still in Egypt. We're still in Egypt, we're not yet Jewish. So you can't say the bracha of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's only through that description, that retelling, that reenactment, we get to the end of Magid, we say, oh, now we're Jewish. We can recite the bracha. And that's why he says, you break the matzah even though you didn't recite the bracha. That, he says, is the pshat of Yachatz. Manishtana. Manishtana. The questions that we ask every year. Same questions. This is an essential part of the Haggadah because, as the Rambam describes, we have to recite the Haggadah derech she'ela u'tshuva, through questions and answers. Ad kedei kach, so much so that, God forbid, if a person was having a Seder all alone, they have to ask themselves. There were people in the not-so-distant past who actually had to experience a Seder alone, Rachmana Litzlan. During COVID, there were some people who literally had a Seder alone, and they actually had to recite the Manishtana, asking and answering. So the question is why? What's the reason for asking and answering? So I saw this year a new idea, a new insight. All of these are new this year. A new insight from Reb Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. He says, why is it that you ask a question? It's because you're looking to re-examine something. You're looking to inquire. There's an organizational psychologist whose podcast I enjoy. He's a very insightful person, very thoughtful and thought-provoking person. His name is Adam Grant. So one of the svarim from Adam Grant, it's called Think Again. It's about rethinking. It's about taking a new perspective on things that you've done before. So says Reb Tzadok, when a person asks a question, it's an act of rethinking. It means you are looking at it from a fresh perspective. It's a new experience. When you don't ask, when you just press play, you're on autopilot, that means whatever I did before, that's what I'm doing now. But when you rethink, it's a new experience. So Tzadok says, the reason why we have to ask, Pesach al Shema, why do we have the Pesach? Matzah al Shema, Mor al Shema. Because we have to see this experience, Lahargish benafsho chadoshus. We have to feel a sense of newness, that this is different. There is the potential for, oh, I did it last year. It's the same Seder I did last year, the same people who were there, the same food that was there. It's all the same. But Reb Tzadok says, it's not true. Liros es atzmo ki'ilu hu yatzim Mitzrayim, to see ourselves as if we left Egypt, means not just we were leaving Egypt last year, so we're going to re-leave again this year. It's that this experience is a singular moment in history. It's a singular moment in my life. And that is expressed through asking. Because asking means you're re-examining it. You're saying, well, it was one way last year, but this year, maybe it's different. Maybe I have a new take. And that's why you have to start, in a sense, with the Manishtana. You have to start with asking because you are framing this experience as saying, yeah, maybe I did it for 50 years or 60 years or 5 years, but maybe I never did it before. Maybe I never did it in this way. Maybe I never saw it in this way. Maybe that's one of the beautiful reasons why there are so many Haggadahs. There are literally thousands and thousands of Haggadahs. And many people, they buy a new Haggadah every year, every couple of years, or they look for a new Dvar Torah. Something new. Why is that? Because the whole idea of Ki'ilu Yatzami Mitzrayim means it's fresh and it's now. It's not just a holdover. And that is the nature of asking questions. That's the Manishtana. Ha'ar number four. In the Manishtana, we say that we tonight are going to lean. Halaylo hazeh kulonu mesubim. Tonight, we're all going to lean. So we're going to turn our chair sideways so we can really lean over, and we're going to express freedom. Derech Cheirus. That's the inyan of Leil HaSeder. It's the experience of feeling free. That's why we drink four cups. That's why we lean. That's what the Rambam explains. It's Derech Cheirus. It's a way of being free. So the question is, why is it that we need to lean? Why do we need to put our posture as part of the Pesach experience? Posture is a very strange way of expressing something, especially when it comes to a mitzvah. So drinking four cups, holding four species, hearing and blowing a shofar, those are actions. So why is it that posture becomes part of a mitzvah? Where does that come from? What is this inyan of heseba? Heseba is a whole world in halacha of, is it a condition of the mitzvah? Is it an independent mitzvah? But this idea that your posture matters, why is the stance part of the halacha? So there is a study, fascinating study. It was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology in 1988, volume 54, number 5. Fritz Strack, Leonard Martin from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and Sabine Stepper published a study. And this study laid the groundwork for a psychological understanding of a principle that the Sefer HaChinuch talks about. It's called Acharei HaPu'ulos Nimshachem HaLevavos. Following our actions, that has an effect on our identity. They did a study of what would happen if you took a pen and you put it in people's mouths in different ways that it would affect their facial muscles. If you put it in your mouth in a certain way that it makes you smile. This way, you didn't have to think about smiling. You just had a pen in your teeth that would mean that your muscles were inclined to smiling. Subjects reported, I'm reading from the abstract, Bechvodo Uva'atzmo. Subjects reported more intense humor responses when cartoons were presented under facilitating conditions than under inhibiting conditions. If your body, if your posture is inclined to smile, you're actually going to think that the cartoon is funnier. Because your body, your posture has an effect on your outlook. That's what they found. But the Sefer HaChinuch says we knew that long ago. Acharei HaPu'ulos, the way that you act, Nimshachen HaLevavos. Which is why, perhaps, the concept of Heseba is really important Seder night. Because of the basic yesod in Yahadus called fake it till you make it. Sometimes you come to the Seder and you don't feel like such a big Ben Chorin, such a free person. Sometimes you come feeling like an Eved Kanani, you know, depending on how it went in the days and months leading to Pesach. So you know what we tell you? You might not feel like a Ben Chorin. You might not feel like a free person. But at least have the posture. It'll give you a chance. You fake it. You act like a Ben Chorin. You lean like a Ben Chorin. It's like putting the pen in between your teeth. And that will help you feel that way. Don't feel like I'm just going through the motions. It's true. You might be going through the motions, and sometimes we don't feel like Bnei Chorin, but it'll have an effect. It sets a tone for us. The Gemara says in the beginning of Shabbos that one of the Amoraim would wear special socks for davening. Why would he put on special socks for davening? Because Rav Kook explains that it would put him in a frame of mind that he's standing before the Ribono Shel Olam. So he would put on special types of socks. Because that action, that activity, that posture, wearing the socks, that puts you in a certain frame of mind. So halayla hazeh kulanu mesubim. Tonight, you might not feel free yet, so we're going to do you a favor. We're going to give you an opportunity to be in this physical posture that's going to help you appreciate it. So maybe if you're leaning, when you read those words, it'll land better. you'll feel more connected to them. And even if you're not there yet, it'll help you on your way. Kulanu Mesubin. Ha'amar number five. The mitzvah of the night is lesaper, is to tell the story of the Exodus. And we are introduced to this in the beginning of Parshas Bo. Laman, in order, why did the Rebbe Shalom do all these miracles? That we should speak ba'oznei bincha uben bincha. That we should tell our children, our future generations. And I want to read you the words. I want to read it inside. Because there is there's an oddity in the way that it's being described in the Psukim. The Pasuk describes the purpose of this telling over. Ulaman tisaper ba'oznei vincha uven bincha es asher esalati b'mitzrayim ve'es ososai asher samti bam. We're going to tell our children, we're going to tell our grandchildren, future generations, all the miracles that the Ribono Shalom did. V'yidatem ki ani Hashem. V'yidatem, and you will know that I am the Ribono Shalom. So I once heard from Rabbi Lech Biederman, he quoted from one of the Belzer Rebbe's amazing Ha'ara. He says, it should have said, V'yad'u ki ani Hashem. They will know, meaning the children will know. You'll tell them everything that happened, and then they'll know it. But said Rabbi Melech, he said, it's not about giving lectures that they should know it. If you want them to know it, you've got to give it over in a way. You have to experience it in a way. You have to absorb it for yourself, via datem, that you're going to know it. And I think this cuts both ways. Number one, we have to immerse ourselves so much so in investing in sharing it with somebody else that it'll have an effect on us. If you think that you're just going to, you know, show up and somehow Judaism is going to fall in your lap, that's not going to translate to the next generation. But that's really the other side of this. The only way that you're going to really be able to affect bincha uben bincha is v'yidatem, if you feel passionate about it. They know, the future generations, they can tell. They can tell if we're just mailing it in or if it really resonates, if it's really important to us. And that's part of the challenge. Of course, there are times when we don't feel inspired, we don't feel ready, we don't feel equipped. But at our core, we have to realize if we're going to give it over to the bincha ben bincha v'yidatem, we've got to be connected. It's number one, how much, but number two, that's the only way it's going to go. It's only going to be effective if v'yidatem. It's got to be to the point that we're transformed. We come to the Seder, if we're on fire, it's going to rub off on the people around us. Maybe at the beginning, we need to get warmed up. But the fact that we prepare in advance and we study and we think and we plan, that's all part of this. But the sheer, the measure, how do you know if you're equipped or if you're ready or if you're on the right trajectory to passing it on to Bincha Ben Bincha? It's a vidatin. If you feel like you're passionate about the story. There's a second side of this also. Here's another amazing insight. Also, I had seen this essay once before, but I never noticed this piece of the paragraph until this year. The mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling the story of the Exodus. So that mitzvah is, of course, to convey emunah, the reality, the connection, the feeling of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the goal of the Seder. And it expresses, it's the way of communicating the story and the values. Of course, that tells the story of our freedom. But what's fascinating, in light of a comment of Rav Soloveitchik, and something that I myself have observed, is that it's not just the fact that we became free, that we can tell the story. It's because we are free that we are telling the story. It's actually an expression of freedom. You might argue that just like drinking four cups is an expression of freedom, that leaning is an expression of freedom, telling the story is an expression of freedom. How do I know this? Many of us in this room have encountered Holocaust survivors. Some of these survivors have not wanted to speak about their experiences. But what's fascinating is that many survivors, although many of them are no longer with us, many of them not only wanted to talk about it, but they wanted to write about it. They wanted to publish it. I'm not a librarian, so I can't compare to other catastrophes or calamities. But it seems to me that there is a really unusual number of books of average, ordinary people who have written down their story of survival of the Holocaust. And even if it's not going to be read by tons of people, but many, many survivors, they want to tell their story, they want people to hear their story over the years. I would say, again, I don't know, but I would say that there is a disproportionate number of survivors who wrote down their life story from the Holocaust than, I don't know, survivors from the genocide in Rwanda or in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Like, I don't know, but it just seems like there are tons and tons of these books. So why is that? So Rav Soloveitchik has an essay called Redemption Prayer in Talmud Torah. And he says, the slave lives in silence. If such a meaningless existence may be called life, he has no message to deliver. In contrast with the slave, the free man bears a message. He has a good deal to tell and is eager to convey his life story to anyone who cares to listen. I read that line and I'm like, that's the pshat. Because for a person who is that type, who wants to share, who was a slave, who was enslaved by the Germans or other oppressors during that period, and then they were emancipated, they have this desire. Many people, they had this desire to tell. They were looking for an audience of listeners or an audience of readers. They wanted to tell their story. No wonder, says Rav Soloveitchik, the Torah has four times emphasized the duty of the father, a liberated slave, to tell his children born into freedom the story of his liberation. Free man who is eager to tell his story is always surrounded by an audience willing to listen to his story. Now I understand why there's a mitzvah lesaper. There's a mitzvah to tell someone else, to ideally have someone else at your Seder. Because by telling your story, what does it show? It shows that you're free. It shows that same expression of emancipation, the same way that so many survivors wanted to publish their story. Because that was an indication, it was a symbol, it was an expression of, I'm free, I have a story. So on the night of the Seder, I never thought about it this way, the Sipur itself is a symbol of the fact that we're free. And the reason we want to tell that story is because we've been emancipated. That is a simon of Chayrus, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I don't know if anybody agrees with that, but I thought it's a possible reading. But I never thought of that. Okay. We're more than halfway there, Baruch Hashem. Okay. Matzah. There are many interpretations and understandings of the mitzvah of matzah, of this food. And there was a fascinating insight that I learned from an extraordinary, remarkable, incredible, heroic sefer. This sefer is unique. It is one of a handful, you can count them on less than one hand, of svarim that were written during the Holocaust contemporaneously about relating to and addressing the spiritual situation at the time. Many of the svarim that we have reflecting on the spiritual situation in the Holocaust were written afterwards, either by survivors or by people who heard, perspectives, but there are only a small handful. So some of you are familiar with the Eish Kodesh, the writings of the Piasetz Rebbe, and the tshuvas that were written by Rav Ephraim Oshri that he buried and got after the war. But actually, until recently, I had never heard of this sefer. It's called Sifsei Shlomo. I was only able to get an electronic copy of this sefer. I tried searching for it to see if I could buy it somewhere. Seems that's way out of print. There was a man. His name was Rav Shlomo Zalman Unsdorfer. Hashem Yikom Damo Zchus Yogan Aleinu. And this Rav Shlomo Zalman Unsdorfer was the Magid Meisharim of Pressburg. Pressburg, the great Hungarian town. And during the war, he delivered many sermons and he wrote them down. And they survived. And they were cataloged and published. And we have a copy of this. And it's called Sifsei Shlomo, the Lips of Shlomo. So even though he was not killed until he was killed in 1944, we have a series of talks, of drushas. He gave a talk before Pesach. Because you remember, even though the Hungarian Jews, they were under terrible anti-Semitic persecution, but they weren't being deported, they weren't being killed en masse until 1944. So even though their life was extremely, extremely difficult, but he was still giving drashos and giving chizuk and talking about the persecution they had. It's a very extraordinary document from Rav Shlomo Zalman Unsdorfer. And he writes there an amazing vart. He asks a question. I don't know why I never thought about this question. He says, I don't understand. If they were told that they were leaving the next morning, the morning after the Korban Pesach, why didn't they pack? When I get up for a 6 a.m. flight, when I know that I'm leaving at 6 a.m., I have the night before half a suitcase full of food. You never know what could happen. You could get delayed a little bit. You could get, I don't know, you could get hungry, you know? I don't know. You get hungry. They were leaving forever and ever. And what does it say? Why didn't they bake bread for the road? Why weren't they packing food the night before? I understand they ate matzah at the Seder in Mitzrayim because they were told, Pesach, matzah with maror. But that's not why we're remembering Al-Shoma. Al-Shoma is Shiloh Hispik B'Tzekam in the morning. Why didn't they have? If I would have been there, I would have had muffins. They would have been in not a Ziploc bag to get squished in the carry-on. I would have had in a Tupperware. Chametz stickum. What am I going to eat? Matzah? It's crazy. It's crunchy, and everybody on the plane is going to complain that it's loud, and the kids are making a mess. Why didn't they have a Tupperware with muffins, bagels? See, Shlomo Zalman Unsdorfer says something wild. He says, matzah, actually, is a symbol of a lack of faith. He said, had they really believed that they were going to leave, and I would not have the audacity to say this, but Rav Unsdorfer, the Magid Meisharim, he says, had they really believed that they were leaving the next morning, they would have had 3 bagels and cream cheese in the fridge. They wouldn't have been throwing stuff in the oven while someone's screaming, can you get the last kid in the car? They wouldn't have been doing that. So he says a beautiful vort. Matzah al shuma. We're going to eat matzah because shaloh hizbik b'tzekam. And therefore, what do we need to do, he says? We need to bring the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is the expression of emuna. That by offering the Korban Pesach, people were willing to sacrifice their lives. The Korban Pesach is, for every generation, is the tikkun of the fact that they weren't ready to leave Mitzrayim. And so in a certain sense, when we remember, when we eat the matzah, we remember that lechem of meitzarim, of when we weren't seeing the big picture. We weren't ready to go. And from that, look how far we've come. Look where we are now. Look what we've achieved. Fascinating new way of looking at matzah. Thinking of matzah as lechem oni of poor man's bread because we were spiritually impoverished. We weren't ready to get in the car. Ad kadei kach that we had to bake it on the road. So we're going to come from that and we're going to grow. That was where we were. That was the level that we were when we left Egypt. And the Rebbe Shlom took us out nonetheless. And now we're ready to be makriv a korban Pesach. And what's so powerful, emotional, about this piece from Shlomo Zalman Unsdorfer is that when he talked about making a sacrifice, a korban, that was the inyana diyoma. That was the life that he lived. He himself became a korban. His life was a tikkun of that lack of amuna, and so many others who they were moser nefesh mamish. The matzah that they ate was transformed through their life experience, their willingness to be moser nefesh as Jews, even Rachmana Litzlan, was in the most difficult, worst conditions. As you know, that the majority of these Hungarian Jews, in that year in 1944, they went straight to Auschwitz. They were the korban, but that korban, that mesiras nefesh, that ani mamin, that shema, that's the tikkun for the matzah for not being ready to leave. Amazing ha'ara. Ha'ara number 8. We still with this? No one's sleeping yet. Okay. Vayarei osanu ha-mitzrim vaya'anunu. What does it mean? The mitzrim afflicted us, they pained us, and the Gemara, the Chazal, the Medrash is going to explain that pasuk, how difficult it was. So the late Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, Zechet Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, Dr. Twersky has amazing ha'ara. I never noticed it. He says, Vayareu, it could come from the Lashon Ra, meaning they did bad, but it could also be from the Lashon of Rea, Reyem Ahuvim. He says, sometimes the pernicious influence in our lives presents as if it's our friend. How did we fall into this? How did we get into this mess? Because they said, come, settle with us, live with us, be part of us, assimilate into us. They came to us, the Medrash describes, they had this smart tactic of saying, let's do this together. We'll empower them. We'll be part of it. And all of a sudden, that's sweet talking. And where do you turn around? You're in backbreaking labor. But it's vayareu osanu. It's because they were our friend. That sometimes is the biggest challenge. When our enemies oppose us directly as Esav, so sometimes that's easier to confront. But when it's achi, when they say, oh, we're brothers, that could be more challenging. It's more pernicious. Hatzileni na Yaakov says, miyad achi, miyad Esav. The first challenge, the more subtle and difficult challenge is achi. We live in a world today that poses, in certain respects, grave dangers to our spiritual identity, to our emotional, psychological, moral well-being. But this challenge, this Mitzarim, this Mitzrayim, it's also sometimes our Rea, our friend. Technology is amazingly useful. It's a Rea. We are able to stay in touch with people. We can access information. There is more. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, I think he once observed, he said that the internet was created for the proliferation of Torah. There's more access to Torah, to people now, than there ever was. So technology, the devices, the ability, the internet, this is our Rea. This is our friend. We utilize it all the time. It's Achi. But it also could be Meitzarim. It could be Esav. It could trap a person in Mitzrayim, in a place where they destroy their self-worth, where they get addicted to whether it's gambling or pornography or shopping or whatever it is that can mamish suck the soul out of a person. And a person turns around and they spend 210 years meshubed, enslaved to every fad and every status and every Instagram post and everything that's going on, all the craziness. And so what Dr. Twersky says is that we have to be, he doesn't say this, but I think what he's trying to convey is that we have to be attuned and sensitive and aware that sometimes something which is our rea, is a useful tool, is our friend, could also land us in Mitzrayim. And we have to be cautious. Vayareu osanu ha-Mitzrim, vayanunu. They became our friend. And then where did we find ourselves? Binging Netflix for 7 hours. Like, that's exactly what the Seder is telling us. You have to be careful. You have to be careful. It doesn't mean that technology is bad. Vayareu osanu, sometimes it's our friend, but it could also be vayanunu. If we let it control us, then we end up taka in Mitzrayim. The pasuk describes Ani Hashem, Ani v'lo malach. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm going to take you out. I'm going to save you. I'm going to redeem you. Ani v'lo malach, not an angel. Ani v'lo shaliach, not an emissary. Ani hu v'lo acher. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm going to save you. Why is that significant? Lamaisa, we needed to get out. Right? We couldn't stay there any longer. Mishubadim ayinu l'parah b'mitzrayim. We would have ended up, God forbid, in a terrible situation. So we had to get out. Who cares? Why does it matter whether the Ribbono Shel Olam took us out, whether he sent an Uber to pick us out, to send a car? What's the difference? So perhaps this is the difference. Imagine someone calls on the phone and they are asking you for an appointment. They need your time. They need to speak to you about cleaning your gutters. Now, I think that the gutter cleaners, God bless them, they do amazing things. They save our foundations of our houses, and they keep the dreck from getting... It's a very important job. But Lamaisa, it's not on your top priority list to speak to the gutter cleaner. It's not a major top priority. And imagine you are a CEO of not a Fortune 500 company, a Fortune 10 company. I don't know if there's such a thing. I just made that up. You're mamish, the top of the top. So your time is the most precious time in the world. It's very important. So when the gutter cleaner calls the office of the CEO, does the CEO get on the phone and say, you know, can we set a time next week? You'll be over to the house maybe at 10 o'clock in the morning. Somebody will be there. No. The CEO tells the secretary or the assistant or somebody in the outer office, please call the gutter people back and set an appointment and figure it out with them. Because it's not worth his or her time to call them. But when the president of the United States calls, the CEO doesn't tell the assistant, you know, call the president back and tell them this, that, and the other thing. No. Because if it's somebody that you think is very chashuv, you're going to take that call yourself. Whether or not you delegate it or you take it depends on how you view that person and that relationship. I'm not sure what would happen if I asked our amazingly talented and devoted administrative assistant in the Kollel office to call my dad back on Friday afternoon before Shabbos. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a move. That is not a move. If my dad calls, I pick up the phone and I call him back myself. Because that's kibbutz. That's a relationship. When the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim, what he's trying to tell us is that we are special, that we are worth kivyachol his attention. Obviously, that's all a metaphor. But the metaphor is, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I could have sent a malach, I could have sent an Uber, I could have sent a shaliach, I could have had somebody else call you. If it was about taking you out of Egypt, so then I'd send somebody else. But no, I can't do that. Because this is about telling you, I care about you. This is about going on a journey together. This is about teaching you that you're worth something, that you're special. An evil omalach. That's the message that we need to walk away with. We need to walk away feeling, wow, the Ribbono Shel Olam thinks I'm worth picking up my call. He didn't send me to an assistant or to a scheduler or to somebody else. I ask Mechila for anybody who I ever asked someone to call them on my behalf. No, we're all trying. But I think that that's what the Rebbe Olshem wants us to understand, that it's aniv lo shaliach, that we are his priority. We're the number one priority. We're the only priority. Nothing else matters. The same way that Rachmana Litzlan, if somebody, lo aleinu, had a child that was in the hospital with a serious ailment, they wouldn't send somebody from their office to sit with the child. They would go by themselves because the child is their first priority. How do you think the child would feel if an executive assistant came from the CEO's office and said, your dad or your mom asked me to keep you company when you're sitting in the ICU? If that relationship is important, so then the parent comes by themselves. And we see it b'moinenu. The parents will drop everything because they're going to be there with their child. Ani v'lo malach, ani v'lo shaliach. If this is my top priority, that's where I'm going to be, not through a shaliach. And that's what the Rebbe Olshem wants us to know, that we are his top priority. And how special is that? One final ha'ara. And we are right on time. We conclude the Haggadah with a beautiful song, with many beautiful songs, one of them, Echad Mi Yodea. We conclude with Chad Gadya, with Kael B'nai, all these beautiful songs. And you wonder, what does this have to do with the Haggadah? So some of them, if you look carefully, they have to do with what happened on Seder night. Vayi b'chatzi alayla. It was on this night. So it's part of the narrative of the Rebbe Olshem redeeming us. The Vilna Gaon talks about the development of history in Chag Gadya. What is Echad Mi Yodea? I saw recently that Rabbi Reisman Shlita, the Tor V'das Rosh Hashiva, said for Rav Pam that anything that a person does that is related to the Ribbono Shel Olam and our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's also connected. It's also part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So maybe that's why we sing these songs. But perhaps there's another angle. And that is that by the time the night of the Seder draws to a close, we are ideally meant to be transformed, even if just for a moment. We are meant to see the world through the lens of the Ribbono Shel Olam, through everything that exists around us as a window into Hashem, and a way of connecting to him. And therefore, in this way, we are really embracing Hashem in all aspects of our lives. So, just for example, you try to get into some shul that you've never been to before. So what do you need to know? How many imos, and how many avos, and how many dibros? Because the way that we are meant to filter the world is through our spiritual lens. So if somebody were to put a number up on the wall on the subway line, you see the number 3, the first association when we're coming out of Mitzrayim is, 3 avos. How beautiful is that? We have 3 avos. You see the number 2, you see, 2 luchos habris. It's because our associations have run so deep, our connection to Hashem that has been developed and nourished organically. And what does it all end with? Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim V'aretz. As they say in Yiddish, Einer is der God. There's one God. That's what it all boils down to. And maybe that's the tachlis of the Seder. And that is a kiyum of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because what's the purpose of it all? The purpose is emuna. Tzadik be'emunaso yichya, that is the central principle. The pasuk in Chavakuk, the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Makos, that pasuk captures all of Judaism. It's that when we think of what is one, what is everything distilled down to, it's Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim V'aretz. So that when we see the numbers, we see the patterns, when we see all the phenomena, we associate it with different aspects of our Judaism, but ultimately it's all distilled down to the one, to the Echad, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So to summarize, we talked about the Shpoler Zeta and how when we recite Kiddush, It's a time of kiddushin, of the Ribbono Shel Olam embracing us as we begin the Seder, no matter where we are, no matter what our attitude or station or feeling is. It's a time for kiddushin, of feeling embraced before we should, God forbid, not fall asleep, not fall into the doldrums of the slumber of the exile. Yachatz, seeing an actual real life transformation, going from a stage, says the Chasam Sofer, when we're not yet Jewish, so we can just break the matzah before we make a bracha, just like we don't recite the bracha of Asher Golan until after Magid. Manishtana, asking questions, because Reb Tzadok says that we have to, as Adam Grant would say, we have to rethink. We have to see it as a new experience. Kulana Mesubim, we're all going to be leaning because we got to at least fake it till we make it, because we have to put the posture into place so that it can have an effect on us, because it does. Chayavim l'saper, we have to tell that story v'yidatim, to the extent that we know. And once we know it, we'll be able to convey it to the next generation. L'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, telling the story is not just something we do because we were freed and therefore we tell the story. The fact that we tell the story is an expression, a symbol of the fact that we're free. The matzah, the lack, said Rav Unsdorfer, the lack of preparedness, of remembering the fact that we weren't quite ready, and offering the Karma Pesach, girding ourselves, stealing ourselves, to be prepared to be Moser Nefesh for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Have we ever seen a door in recent generations since his door of Jews who were ready to be Moser Nefesh, Mamish, who are misaking the Achilas Matzah with their whole lives? That's the Mesiris Nefesh. Vayoreu Osanu, being cautious and sensitive and aware of the influences in our lives. As they say, with friends like these, who needs enemies? Because we let them in the door for good reason, Vayoreu Osanu, but you have to be careful that it shouldn't be sholing on us. Ani Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm going to take you out because you are my priority. V'lo shaliach, I'm not going to send an agent. And finally, Echad Miyodea, becoming transformed so that all of our associations connect back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and land Echad Elokeinu v'Hashamayim v'Aretz. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the one, the only one in the heavens and the earth. And so hopefully we will be able to take some of these themes, some of these ideas, and really lean into that echa to the Ribbono Shel Olam as we grow in Mirtza Hashem, in our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and merit that the Ribbono Shel Olam will bring a Yeshua Bekarov Mamish. He will bring the redemption in this month of Nisan. We should see Besuros Tovos, Yeshuos V'Nechamos for all of Klal Yisrael.